listening to nativetalk.net. Audio files are available online at nativetalk.net. Broadcasting from a room about the size of your closet, except we've got more expensive junk. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. Hey, keep your eyes on the road. That's how accidents happen. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and welcome to the nativetalk.net radio podcast. We're so glad you could join us this morning. If you would like to be a part of the program, you can email us, podcast@nativetalk.net. And as always, visit us on the Facebook page, facebook.com/nativetalkradio. Now, we've been talking a little bit about my trip to Alaska, and specifically the western portion of Alaska, also known as the Yupik region of Alaskan Native peoples. Now, like all Native peoples, they have legends and traditions which span thousands of years in the past. Many of them were never written down. They were just passed on by person to person verbally. But today, I want to start the show with a few Yupik folk tales. Now, back in those times, you didn't have the modern conveniences that we have today. So you've got the wind howling outside, whipping snow so fast that the temperature could drop to 70 below zero. You couldn't even hear the wolves howling in the distance. No foxes. On a night like this, it's too cold. Everybody is in their homes, and all you can hear is the sound of the whipping wind and the snow. And they would gather together and tell stories like this. Now, after a few of these stories, we'll finish up. Me, Brandon, my mother, and Brittany will talk about some Yupik facts. So we'll get to that right after the break. Now, in every culture, I think if you're a woman, you can pretty much be assured that you can get a man. Getting a man is not a difficult thing. The difficult thing is getting a good man. And especially when you know that all of the other women are out there trying to grab the good men, you want to be a part of that. So this Yupik story is called Hooking a Man. Now, once there were three sisters who decided that they wanted to get married. So they went out on the lake to go fishing. And you know how it is when you want to when you want to find somebody, you got to go where they are. And in that region, fishing is a huge thing, so they go out on the lake to go fishing. They start casting out their hooks, and soon the oldest sister feels a tug on her line. So she pulls and pulls until at last she pulls up a man. I don't know how realistic this is, but okay, we'll roll with it. This man was big and strong and was a capable enough hunter, so the two of them got married. The next day, two sisters went out fishing again, and soon the middle sister felt a tug on her line. She struggled and struggled for a long time until at last she pulled up a man who was strong and an even better hunter than the first man had been. So the two of them got married. The next day, the younger sister went out fishing, and she hadn't been there long when she felt a tug on the line, and after struggling for some time, she managed to pull an old man ashore. Oh, an old man. Now, the youngest sister was disgusted at having pulled up such an old man, so she pushed him back in the lake and went home. Apparently, she was looking for a certain type. She thought she was going to get something better than her sisters. Now, when she got home, she told her sisters and her brothers-in-law what had happened, and her brothers-in-law told her that the man she'd thrown back was the greatest hunter in the lake, but she still didn't care because he was such an old man. So the next day, the youngest sister went out again to go fishing, and once more, she pulled up the same old man and was even more disgusted just at the thought of marrying him than she had been the first time she'd pulled him up, so she threw him back in the water as before. Now her sisters and brothers-in-law were very sad that she had done this for a second time. Now she was stuck without somebody to hunt for her. And as they all turned into ducks and lived happily ever after in the lake, the youngest sister was stuck alone on the shore with no one to hunt for her. So I think the moral of this... Why did they turn into ducks? That's an odd twist of the story. But I think the moral is, if you have somebody that's capable and can help you out and, you know, they're a good person for you, you shouldn't care about their looks. Now, this seems to be a running theme with the U-Peak people, because the next story that I have is called The Big Mouth Baby. Now, this isn't a baby who... you know, has a big mouth in that they're spreading news all over town. I think they mean like a physical, a big mouth. So let's hear the story. There once was a very vain girl who felt that she was too good for anyone to marry her, but she still wanted a child. So she went to the local shaman, and he told her that he could help her have a child with the help of the spirits. Yeah, not the old-fashioned way, the help of the spirits. But he did warn her that no matter how the child looks, you must present it to the village and be proud of it, or things will go badly for you. This is what we call foreshadowing. So she agreed to it, thinking that any baby that she had would surely be beautiful. However, when her child was finally born, she found that he was born with a gruesome mouth, so large that it stretched above his head, which was already filled with teeth. Horrified and embarrassed, the girl kept the child hidden in the house and almost never looked at it. One day, the child was playing just outside her home while she was sewing new clothes for herself, when an unnatural seeming storm came up, and she heard, so maybe the mother's out there. So I guess the baby's playing outside and the mother is sewing new clothes, when a storm comes up and she heard her baby's strange cries mixed with the wind. Suddenly concerned for her child, I mean, it still is your child, you know, it's a face that only a mother could love. Or the one I always heard, you've got a face for radio, buddy. Which is, I guess, why I went into it. But the mother still cares for her baby. So she ran out to see what was happening, but it was too late. Because the child had not been socialized enough, he was swept away by the wind, became feral and wild, and ate her entire village before fleeing out onto the tundra. So now the big mouth baby wanders the tundra, coming out during storms to devour herds of caribou, and occasionally people as well. So the moral of this one apparently is socialize your child regardless of what they look like. So I think that's good advice for pretty much anyone. Now, as with all native cultures, they always go to they go to animals. And the hero of the Yupik culture was always the raven. So we're going to finish up our trio of stories with the raven and the whale. Once, as the raven was flying over the ocean, he spotted a dead whale. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Yupik, they would hunt whales and seals and stuff like that. They would, so that's part of their culture. So as the raven's flying out, he spots a dead whale floating in the water. Now, he's hungry, so he flew down and crawled inside the whale's blowhole to eat as much as he could. But when he was inside, the whale washed up on shore and turned upside down onto its blowhole, trapping Raven inside. Nearby, where the whale had washed ashore, there was a village. Now, all the people of that village were excited, and when they saw the whale, they cheered that they would now have food for the winter. So as they were cutting up the whale, Raven heard them outside, and he called out to them, "Cut a hole in the top of the whale." Now, the people were quite confused by this strange voice coming from inside the whale, and so the people decided they'd better do what he'd asked, lest they be cursed by it. Now, once they had cut the hole in the whale, Raven flew out so fast that all the people saw was a black blur streaking up into the sky. Now, later, after they had finished carving the whale up and hanging it to render its oil and dry it for the winter, Raven came to the village in the form of a wise old man. Apparently he's a shapeshifter. All right, so Raven acts surprised to see this whale meat, saying that he felt it was cursed. He asked the people if they'd heard any voices coming out of the whale, asking them to cut a hole in it. Now, they were surprised because you know, how could he know? He, you know, this old man, he wasn't around. And so they were surprised he knew about it. So they asked him what it meant. He told them that there had been evil spirits in the whale, which they had just released and which would now curse their village. Yeah, this is a great story. Afraid, the people fled the village, and so Raven was able to spend that winter going from hut to hut, stealing their food. So Raven's smart. I guess, you know, some of these, they don't list the moral, but if I was to guess, don't believe the person selling you a line of garbage, because probably he's a little trickster, which apparently Raven was. So don't believe people who are, you know, lying to you. Try to be a little bit smarter about that, and you won't get things stolen from you. So good lessons from the you pick people. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to share with you, Brandon will be here, my sister and my mother, and we'll share with you some facts about the Yupik people. So hang with us, and we'll be right back with more stimulating Native Talk Radio right here at nativetalk.net.
Grab a hanky. This one could get emotional. You're listening to NativeTalk.net.
Our house Grief Support Center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope. Our house, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444.
You're listening to the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. We're definitely not bribing you to listen, even with your great sense of humor. Not to mention your great looks. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the program. The message line, if you want to call up and drop us a line, 970-278-5791, or leave a message and we'll play it on the air. Visit us online at nativetalk.net to download and listen to any of our past shows. So, all right, let's get to our discussion on Yupik facts. Now, of course, I didn't visit. Most people who visit Alaska, they do it for fun. They want to ride the, you know, go up on the river and hang out and stuff. But I did not go up there for that. I actually went up there on a business trip to meet with the Queethluk tribe. Now, I thought it was pronounced Queethluk, but I was corrected when I got there. It's pronounced Queethluk. And
if only you did much research on all of the native tribe names.
Okay, I don't know how everything is pronounced, so a lot of times you can only learn from when they tell you. And I also called it a town, and I was corrected, it's a village. Not a town, call it a village. So,
did you call it a town to their face?
I called it a town. I said, you know, a small town like this, and I was corrected. They said, it's not a town, it's a village. I mean, they're serious about it. You know, you don't want to mess up. Now, just like down here in the United States, Alaskan natives have many, many different, not just tribes, but types of tribes. So, for example, if you're up in Washington State where we're from, you might have like our tribe, the Puyallups, or the Muckleshoots, or the, I don't know any others.
Nisqually.
But they're all like the same general culture, right? Generally, come on. In the past they had the same type of lifestyle. That's what I'm talking about. Okay,
and to the degree that they lived in the same geographical area and met with the same climate, so yeah, they dealt with it the same way.
So when they lived in homes, they had longhouses. Okay, they didn't have the Nisqually tribe lived in teepees, while the Puyallup tribe had longhouses. Okay, they had the same basic way of life. And so people who think that all Native Americans in the lower 48 states lived in teepees, you know, the tribes who didn't, are quick to point out that they're wrong. Well, a lot of people imagine the Alaska Natives all lived in igloos, you know, Eskimos. That's the what you would imagine. But as you can see from this map, all of these are, well, you have a record number of tribes There were also a number of regions. I think there are like 267 individual tribes in Alaska, which is more than the entire rest of the United States. But they have like all of the different regions. I went to the southwestern portion of Alaska, where they call themselves the Yupik. All right, and
so I'm super confused by that map.
Okay,
I just want to know. So he said it. You can see from this map, and then he held like this little space amoeba looking red thing up to the screen, which I know our listening audience had a great view of.
Okay,
but I don't understand what the hell that map means.
It's the different native areas. So you've got.
It looks like he's trying to eat the island. Look,
he's. I think he's just pointing out. That
I'm
shades, those are all different
hues of color.
Well, yeah, all regions. The different hues, those are all different tribes.
No, regions.
Regions of tribes.
Of tribes.
Okay. So it's kind of like if you look at a map of the United States and they have some colors that are orange and yellow and blue, those states are not actually those colors. They do it for ease of visual. Brandon's talking about the colors like an amoeba, and I'm just pointing out to him that's just a map. To make it easier to see, okay?
It didn't make it easier. It made it more confusing for me.
Yeah, and that's why I explained to Brandon, when he looks at a map of the United States and they have some states in purple and some states in blue, and you go there, the dirt is not actually that color.
Mind blown.
I know.
So I went to the central Yupik area, and they have a culture that is individual just to that region. Now, they have the longest river, which is continuously and completely in one single state. There are other rivers that are longer, but they, you know, travel between different states, okay? And so this river for them is life. At first, I didn't realize how they traveled around because, you know, nowadays you have to go by plane. Well, it should have been obvious. They all take the river. And that's like the highway up there. And they can travel by river literally hundreds or even thousands of miles in the awesome. In the summertime as they go way up north or, you know, down south, and they're visiting all of the different various villages. And in the wintertime, the river freezes. And back in the days, they would mush their dogs. Which, by the way, mushing dogs, official state sport of Alaska.
That sounds like a Michael Vick pastime.
Okay, they didn't fight them. They
tenderizers from the Hammer Museum.
I was just gonna say that. That's funny. Oh. Like, I wonder.
They even have Yupik communities in the Far East. That's technically Russia. So some of these tribes are in legit Russia, but they're not part of the United States, but they're still Yupik. And what's that?
It was a Sarah Palin joke from like 2010. It's not relevant. Move on.
Okay. Now, like most Alaska natives, they live in native villages, which are not reservations. I didn't realize this. They don't live on reservations at all. They have organized villages. And they are independent from one another, but they have like coalitions with some of their neighbors. But they don't have the same sovereignty that we have down in the lower 48 states. So they don't have a lot of the same benefits that are afforded to us, making things a little bit difficult for them. In fact, they have one reservation in all of Alaska, even though they have the most number of tribes.
Is the reservation red or blue?
What? Okay, on this map, it happens to be blue, the Yupik, all right? Yupik.
My favorite color.
Now, most of them speak both languages, Yupik and English, but Yupik is their native language. That's the first one they learn when they're babies, and then they start to learn English later on. And I was interested that in their language, a lot of their words are Russian. Like in Russian, you've got achki. And it's the same thing in Yupik, because that area was the first to be contacted by Russians. And this one also surprised me. The main religion up there is Russian Orthodox. So when I showed up, right across the street from the tribal council offices was a Russian Orthodox church, which shocked me because the last place I thought I'd see that is in a tiny Alaskan village, you know, but that is the main religion there. They have one other church that's there in the village, but Russian Orthodox is the main one.
So, I would think like Iraq or Afghanistan would be the last place I would assume to see that.
Okay.
Thank
you for bringing that up, Brandon. You're right. The Russian Orthodox Church would be less likely in Iraq. Okay?
Maybe.
I was still surprised.
Anacondas and Orthodox churches.
You jerk.
Notice that we crickets over here after his comment.
I was laughing. I'm just not on the microphone.
Well, I've got actual crickets now.
I'm fine with it. I do this show for myself. It's all right. I thought it was funny.
So, and you know, if you look online and you look at the homes that they have in these native villages, your first impression is going to be these things are like shacks, right? But do you know why they're like that? Because they do. They're just basically plywood, plywood-looking shed things. Okay,
but, I never put much thought into it, but I would think, do they like? Is it hard to put a foundation in the ground or something like that?
No, they don't. Because first of all homes are raised up about 4 feet because of flooding. So everything has to be like movable. So and it's extremely difficult to get building materials up there. So on barges, they'll get plywood and, you know, beams and stuff like that. And they don't have people who build your homes for you. You literally build your home by yourself with your own hands.
That's kind of cool.
So they don't have the same types of homes that we have down here in the lower 48 states. And when you first see it, you think like, you know, oh man, it looks so primitive. But then when you look at what goes into it, you realize that this river is very fluid and it can erode. And what is a village today may be underwater 20, 30 years from now. And so they have to have the ability to move things and move around and stuff like that. So
that was one of the really eye-opening things for me when I took a geology course, is that rivers are totally fluid. And if you take a time-lapse photo or you look at rivers from the sky, you can see the rivers moving. Or if you look at the trails in the ground, you can see the cuts where the river used to be. And they even have like lakes called Oxbow Lakes that are formed from a bend in the river that was then cut off as the river took a new path. So yeah, that totally resonates with me.
Yeah,
that they would.
And so they're traditionally nomadic people.
I wish people in the lower 48 would take a hint, because if you go look on YouTube at houses being washed into rivers, there's no shortage of them, dude. People are building them right on the banks, and their million-dollar homes are just washed off into the river.
Seems like something like that might be a place where insurance might be useful.
Scam. Oh, excuse me.
Well, yeah. Well, when your home gets washed into the river, I'll be happy when I have insurance and you don't.
I'm glad that you take pleasure from my pain, Cliff. That's the brotherly love we like.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last thing I want to mention about this, because I saw one of these in this village, which I thought was very interesting. Before their actual structures, they lived in earth homes, which they called Bara Bara, and a Yupik earth house was made by digging an underground chamber, raising a wooden frame over it, covering the frame with grass mats, and then packing the entire structure in layers of earth. And because Yupik homes were mostly underground, they appeared smaller than they actually were. And it was pointed out to me that as I was walking down the street, they showed it to me. You don't even notice it. You would walk by that dozens of times and not realize that's a home, but people are living like in the earth, and it just looks like ground, field, like a little hill. Yupik men and women did not traditionally live in the same house. Men in each village lived together in one big house, and women and children lived in smaller houses organized by family groups. Yupik people typically do not live in old-fashioned barabaras anymore, any more than modern Americans live in log cabins. Some people will still dig them if they can't afford building materials, because everything is so expensive up there. It's like ridiculous expensive. So,
I would dig a barabara. That sounds like an awesome way to live.
You should.
Mom's looking for a house right now, and Dad's thinking about buying a mobile. What are they? Portable homes that just move in. Just get a barabara.
Just dig it. Pretty.
Clifton knows how to do it now.
Yeah, it's a tradition of building your own home. And so I was meeting with a bunch of people out there, and they would say things like, people visit our town and they turn their nose up at our homes because they look so primitive. But people don't realize what goes into that, that those homes cost as much as a home down here, just because it's so difficult and expensive to get any kind of building materials up there, period. So, you know, I visited homes and they're cozy. They're really nice. They're not bad. So, you know, looks can be deceiving if you see photos of them, and I'll post them up at nativetalk.net/Alaska, where you can see some of the things that I saw. All right, there we go. Some Yupik facts. And as I mentioned, you can find the photos from my Alaska trip there on the website. I'm still like working on posting them. So if you looked at them last week, check them again over the next few days and see. I'm trying to work it out so that I can have them like in different sections, like the airport, you know, the planes, and like, you know, the village and the fish village and all the different stuff, so that you'll be able to see the different sections rather than just, you know, throwing them all up in a big jumbled mess. So continue to check back at that website, the nativetalk.net/ I think it's Alaska, /Alaska, I believe so. But anyway, I hope you enjoy that. As always, thank you for listening, and that'll do it for us today. But we'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio. I'll be talking about the trip specifically online at nativetalk.net. We hope you share the show with your friends. Go ahead and send them to our website. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. Have a great day. We'll see you next week with more stories about my Alaska trip.
This is the nativetalk.net radio podcast. Face it, every other podcast in town bites. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.